You're listening to Packers Talk Network. PackersTalk.com.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Packers Therapy.
It's Packers Therapy. It's Chris and Dave, and the Packers riding a two-game winning streak. Packers beat the Texans at Lambeau Field in the snow on Sunday to move to 6-6. Chris in Plover, Dave in St. Louis. Packers now just kind of back in the hunt again, but I'm not sure I'm convinced, Dave, if we can really trust this. In other words, I'm not sure that this is a team necessarily that is as poised as Aaron Rodgers thinks they might be to run the table. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not convinced. I feel like they just won the insignificant bowl on Sunday. They beat Houston, which seemed like a very flawed team. They played in weather, which was a major factor, so it was hard to tell if our pass defense was as good as it was because of the snow. And they made a bunch of mistakes, more injuries and guys that just are playing okay. I guess we have moved on from the point where we want everyone to be fired to indifference, which is heading in the right direction. But I'm not ready to, you know, get excited about the playoffs, or certainly not a Super Bowl type season. And I think Seattle coming to town could be a real eye opener for this team, or it could be the launching pad for the rest of the season. I mean, I think Seattle is a Green Bay Packer dream killer of a number of years, and I think this will be a really good test for them to see where they're at.
I totally agree with that, Dave. I think that the tail of the Packers season will be decided in the upcoming week when the Seahawks come to town. Right now, though, because we're enjoying the journey, they go back to 500. They win the game. Now, I do agree that the weather was a factor in their favor. It seemed as though the slippery conditions slowed everything down, and that allowed a defense that is just, you know, dinged up and nicked up and injured and whatever you want to say. I think that was an equalizing factor. And then you throw in the fact that the Texans don't have a very good quarterback, probably under any weather conditions.
Right.
And this was a game that the Packers just, you know, probably should have won because it was a good matchup for them, and it was only enhanced by having it at home and in the bad weather. So I'm like last week. I'm happy they won. That was a good thing. It was nice to see Aaron Rodgers the third consecutive week with a passer rating over 100. That was good. But it's just really hard to get completely excited about it when, you know, this was not a real test for them like it will be when they play Seattle this week coming up.
Yeah, they're disappointing, right? I feel like there were glimpses where there are things to get excited about. I have this vision of what this team could be right now after their fall off in performance, that they come back. And how does that happen? Well, Kristen Michael is a really strong player. Their offense has really discovered itself with the short passing game. The defense is playing inspired. You know, those are things that would get me excited for the rest of the season, but none of that is playing itself out. They've won the last two games, but, you know, all those things. You know, Kristen Michael looked okay at times, but especially that last series of carries that he had looked really uninspired. You know, he looked like just a guy that ran into the pile and fell down. You know, their defense, I think, was only really helped out by the weather. And for some unbelievable reason, it feels like they do not want to go to the short passing game at all. I thought there was one series in particular. I meant to look up exactly where it was, but this was the series. It was a 3-and-out. The first play, I think it was in the second half, too. I bet you I could probably find it in a 3-and-out situation. Maybe it was right after the half. No, it wasn't that one. The first play was a deep pass in the snow, way down the field, not even close to being complete. The second down was a running play into the pile. Third and 10, they throw an out 8 yards, out of bounds, punt. And I thought, why aren't they running that sort of 6 to 8 yard out pattern on first down and keep moving the chains down the field? I feel they're very successful. They have the offense and the players to run that type of offense, and they seem to refuse to want to stick with it and do it. I don't understand that. So it's a confusing team to me, and it's hard to get excited about this, the way they're approaching these games.
I'm going to agree with you with this point that at this point, I don't know why they bother with the pretense of a running game. They ran it 23 times yesterday, 26 if you include the three that Aaron Rodgers limped around for 16 yards. So 23 times, and I suppose you have to do it. You have to have the patina, you might say, the pretend that maybe that they are going to run, so give the defense something to think about. But when your leading rusher is a guy who was at the beginning of the season, was a wide receiver, that tells you don't have much of a threat there. And when you look back at their most success this season, the Bears game, Atlanta, the Philadelphia game, and other games too, where they've had stretches where they've been successful offensively, it's been because they've run that short, quick passing game. And I hear people talking about on the radio shows, Bill Michaels in particular, about how they got to run the ball and how they need to commit to the run, and it's a mistake not to try to run the ball, and they get something going, they got to pound it. And well, first off, I don't think their offensive line is really catered to a running game. I mean, they just don't have that kind of skill set, so I think that's a problem to start off with. They don't have a lot of success with it, certainly not consistently, and maybe that's because their line, which is also a bit dinged up, even when they're healthy, I'm not sure that they're, much when it comes to, being road graders. They're much better as pass protecting.
And they did a good job in this game.
Oh, yeah.
I think protecting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sure. Oh, yeah. Sure. But they have all season long. I just don't know why they even bother running as much as they do, other than maybe the fact that you've got to give the other team something to look at once in a while, but then in that case, run it in situations where it doesn't really matter. In other words, first down, if you get those 6 yards on first down, run it on second, you'll get two, and then you got third and two, and that's makeable. But you really got to go back to what you do best, and what they do best is pass the ball, and they do it very well when they can pass on rhythm.
I agree, and I think Ty Montgomery as that running back, where if you're going to run, you do a lot of screens, you do a lot of draw plays, not sort of the fullback kind of traditional run up the gut kind of plays. I just don't see them as being designed to do that. But they, when they do run the Ty Montgomery, and they're expecting potentially a pass, I wonder if they're playing nickel or dime when Ty Montgomery is the running back, because he's having some success running the ball. I thought he was their best runner. He ran six times. He averaged almost 7 yards a carry. Everyone else they had, I thought James Starks really hurt himself this game. Not physically, maybe, but I thought it was early in the game. It was a third and short. And not only did he kind of bounce outside again, which he always does, but I felt there was actually a hole for him. I wish they could have isolated it, maybe in one of those sort of camera 22 type things, you could see it better. But I thought it seemed like it was blocked correctly. He bounced out too quickly, and he went right to the bench. I think they would rather try Christian Michael, and then they went to Ty Montgomery. And I think James Starks found himself on the bench yesterday. But, they're not set up to be a traditional running team. And I found the series of plays that really frustrated me. And maybe tell me if I'm talking or putting too much into this series, but it was right after Houston scored a touchdown. Now it's 7-7 after the half. Houston kicks off, and Ty Montgomery has a great return for 39 yards. So now it's 1st and 10, Green Bay on their own 44. First play is a deep ball to Adams, not even close. Second down, they run Michael 1 yard. Then 3rd and 9, they run a 7-yard play to Cobb. He gets out of bounds. Now it's 4th and 2. And what do you do at 4th and 2 when you're on your own? I guess they're on the Houston 48 now. So they're at midfield. They run Rutkowski up the middle into Vince Wilfork, who we couldn't move that guy if we had two more guys in the offensive line.
He is a big guy.
He is huge. Why would you do that? So that's what makes me sort of not excited about this team. It's not the performance, but the decision-making, too. Why would you, of all the things you have available to you, you've got, I mean, you're 4 or 5 receivers deep that are pretty athletic within sort of a 5-yard radius. They have a light offensive line, and we're going to run at Vince Wilfork. That just is like you're not even paying attention as a coach, as a play caller. If that's the way we're going to play against Seattle or a good team, we're going to get our lunch handed to us every single time.
Well, no, on that particular sequence, and that has been a big topic of conversation, both on the radio shows and also on Twitter, the consensus seems to be that that was a decision by Aaron Rodgers and not by Mike McCarthy. I believe that the thinking on that was that it was a called pass play, but Rodgers has a run pass option, and he went with the run on that. And there are people that are suggesting, I don't know if this is true, but that Rodgers is, you know, he's a big fan of Rutkowski in the same way that he was a big fan of John Kuhn. And the evidence for that is the way that Rodgers likes to reference Rutkowski in his comments. He talks about him a lot. Wilde mentioned this. This was also mentioned by Bart Winkler, I think, one of the morning guys in Milwaukee sports talk radio. And so the thinking was that, well, you know, he trusts him. So he audibled to, you know, give him the ball and let him run with the thing. To me, in that situation, and as I looked at that play, I remember thinking, it's 2 yards, but it looks like a long 2 yards, you know, that sort of deal. And when they only had Rutkowski in the backfield, I thought, well, they must want to pass because Rutkowski would be the guy you'd keep in for protection, or maybe he'd be a guy to go out for a screen, but they're not going to try to run it with him. And it seemed to be that was a quarterback decision more so than it was from the sideline. Now, I don't know, you know, what the reality is of that, but that does seem to be kind of the consensus of opinion that's around, is that, you know, Rodgers changed the call because he had confidence in Rutkowski. I mean, the guys run the ball much better than I thought. I mean, he had 14 yards on 3 carries yesterday. We've seen him carry a little bit now. He is very John Kuhn-like, a younger version of John Kuhn. And, you know, Kuhn could occasionally get some yardage, but I thought, man, that's 2 yards on 4th down for that guy. I don't know, maybe Amon Green, you know, you might go that way. Or Eddie Lacy, you know, maybe Ryan Grant, but man, not a guy like Rutkowski. So I was surprised by that, but I don't know necessarily if that was the call from the sideline.
Yeah, that's a good question. And what would you do if you're McCarthy, if you have a play? I suppose if every play you call has a run pass option, then, you know, how many plays can you pin on McCarthy? I guess I might change the system where if I, like, we're passing and I don't care what you see, we're passing. I mean, I hate to do that because when you're at the line of scrimmage, if you think you see something, but man, maybe I would put some kind of system in to say you can't audible to the run. I'll give you a lot of lenience if to audible to the pass because that's what we do better. But to audible to the run on a 4th down, I mean, that could have been a game changer right there. We had really controlled the game the whole first half, even though we're up 7-0. We just go 3 and out after the half. Houston scores a touchdown, and we basically go 3 or 4 and out and turn the ball over at midfield. That could have just been the game and the season. And as a coach, I'm surprised McCarthy does not light Aaron Rodgers up. I guess because he's Aaron Rodgers, you just by definition can't. But I don't know. He's a better man than me. I would just be so furious if that's the way that happened and to see that fail, because I'm sure any reasonable person would have passed if you're going to go for. I would have punted, honestly. I don't know what you would have done at that point. I think at that in the snow, I would have just punted. But to then audible to the run and have it not work, I'd be beside myself. I don't.
Well, I would have been beside myself when they fumbled after getting the turnover and really basically teeing themselves up for at worst a field goal, and they're what, inside the 5 yard line and they fumble. I mean, you know, bad exchanges are going to happen, but in that situation, and you know, they even showed the picture of McCarthy was not a happy man. When that bad exchange happened and they lost the ball. And at that point, I'm thinking, oh, it's going to be this kind of game, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, as it was, things ultimately worked out fine. Getting back to your question, though, I probably would have punted there, mainly because the kind of game it was turning out to be a low-scoring game in which field position was going to be important. And the punter, I'm quite sure if that's pronounced correctly, but he is punting very well. I thought the opposite would happen. He kicked well early in the season, and the weather got bad, he'd be a problem. It's been the opposite. The guy has been very, very good. He's been a weapon when it comes to punting into the corners inside the 20, and given the situation of the weather, given you're at midfield, this would be a perfect time to pin him back inside the 20, maybe even inside the 10-yard line. And in a game with bad field conditions that's going to be low scoring, I would think field position would have been the most important thing there, not going for it on 4th and 2, especially in an alignment where you've got your fullback in the backfield. So that would have been my particular preference there, would have been to punt. Now, it didn't work out. In the small sense, it didn't work out. In the big sense, it did. But that was a situation where I, maybe could have seen it if the weather had been better. Maybe the playbook is a little bit bigger then too. You could have tried more things. But in a game like that, where the field is lousy, it's tough to get traction if you're a running back. It's tough to get traction if you're a lineman. I mean, there's so many things that could go wrong there. I think your chances of converting on the fourth down were probably a lot smaller. So, that's not what I would have done. But maybe McCarthy in the back of his head, he's trying to convince people that he's not a conservative coach. And damn it, I'm going to go for it. You're near midfield and you can't call me conservative. I mean, I don't know if that's his mindset. Same thing with Aaron Rodgers, that he's – maybe outthought himself and thought, aha, I think they're ready for the pass, so I'm going to try to hand it to my buddy, the other Aaron, and let him, gain a couple of yards for a first down. It just seemed ill-conceived, and it did seem like the kind of play that happens when the momentum of a game switches around. Didn't turn out that way, but it sure felt like that.
Yeah, and it's good they weren't playing Seattle. But, you're right. This time around, it didn't really hurt them too much, but it just – I think that's why I don't walk away from this game thinking, hey, two games and we're back in it. We're 6-6. Philly and Houston a few weeks ago would have seemed like pretty good wins. I'm excited about this team. They turned the corner. I feel like we're kind of in the same lethargic page. It's just we've won a few games instead of we've lost a few. But, what are some good things we can take away from the victory? One is I think Jordy Nelson had a very good game. And I thought there were glimpses of him where it's kind of like, he may not be completely the Jordy of old, but he looks a lot stronger than he was at the beginning of the year. And that's a real positive. When you think of Nelson, Cobb, I thought Cook had a decent game. That's what you're looking for in tight ends, is get you a couple first downs. And Adams, although he didn't have a great game this game, he's shown flashes of being, a good player. So I think the receiving and the play of Aaron Rodgers is improving. I think we can take that as a positive. Would you agree with that?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Jordy Nelson, because a couple things about Jordy's play were encouraging to me. And he's he's 32 years old, I believe. Is that right? 31 or 32? And so for a receiver, he's definitely on the backside of the career. But a couple things really stood out for me.
Okay, Google.
And what's some of it it's hard to gauge because the defenders are on slippery conditions, and so they have to be a lot more careful. Jordy knows where he's going. Aaron knows where he's going. The defenders don't. And, he just – the way he was attacking the ball, it just looked like Jordy Nelson that we're you know, accustomed to seeing. I mean, there was a couple of situations where he took the ball away from, you know, the defender. He got lucky at one point, you know, where the defender fell down, left him all alone in the end zone. Now you think, well, that's an easy catch. I don't know that that's an easy catch. That may be a harder catch because you've got your back and the ball's coming to you and it's almost like a punt. You know,
yeah,
you have
right.
to feel that thing cleanly, but you know, he handled it well. The play along the sidelines in which, guy tried to take his head off and missed him. You know, that kind of body control that he showed along the sideline.
Yeah, that's vintage Jordy, right?
It was very familiar. And the other thing is, too, is that the way he was acting, you know, just you could see him be excited,
right.
Showing the first down thing, flexing his muscles. I mean, the way he went about it, it was almost like he felt good. You know, that his body was his body again, and he was playing like his old self because he felt like his old self. I don't know the extent to which that's true, but he was just playing, apparently, with a lot more confidence. So, yeah, the 8 catches for 118 yards, really, really nice. But it was more than that. It's more about how he got those catches and those yardage, the way he went about it. And, oh, by the way, don't look now, but you know, the guy's having, you know, in terms of statistically, 3/4 of the way through the season, he's got over 800 yards in receiving. He's got almost 70 catches. I mean, the guy is probably on his way to 90-plus catches and, you know, maybe something like 1,200 yards. He's already got 10 touchdowns on the season. He's going to wind up with 12 or 13 touchdowns probably. And you're going to look back at it and say, hey, you know, Jordy's back. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that because we haven't seen a lot of the long balls, but just statistically looking at his line, you know, there's a lot there to be encouraged about. Problem is, next season, you know, he's going to be another year older, and so this was the year to come back from the injury. Next year he might be healthier, but, you know, Father Time is catching up with him at the same time. For this particular game, in these particular weather conditions, yeah, it was encouraging. It was nice to see, but it's not like the guy is 28 and, you know, he's got, you know, still the peak of his career ahead of him.
But there are glimpses in this game where I felt that receivers were getting open. There was variety. They were moving the ball down the field. A couple of times where I thought Rodgers held the ball and then dances around it in the backfield. There's one third down throw where I thought he should have thrown. It was pretty clear he's going to Cook. And Cook was relatively covered, not you know, NFL covered, where, you know, there's always going to be a guy near him. But I thought Rodgers could have thrown it, but he ended up running around, and I think he got sacked. So there's a few of those plays, but it's not as bad as it was this last year, where it's just like, man, no one's getting open. I felt that this game felt different than that there was ability to move the ball. I really strongly feel, and I think I'm not alone on this, that their best offense is 3 or 4 wide receivers and Ty Montgomery in the backfield.
In the backfield, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And maybe Ripkowski, you could, you know, maybe have him be a blocking back for Montgomery. Or if you want to put Ripkowski as a blocker and then maybe a surprise handoff once in a while, fine. But I really think the James Starks offense is not working. Kristen Michael, maybe he'll get better. His first carry that he had, I thought, great, that's a 4-yard carry. He looks good because he looked better than Starks. But then as the game went on, I thought, I don't know if he looks special to me. But it'll be really interesting this week against Seattle. He's got to be motivated against Seattle at home to do well, don't you think? I mean, the best we're going to see out of Michael has got to be this week, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, NFL players always, you know, downplay that. But, you know, the way that it went for him, you know, getting basically kicked to the curb, there'll be a little motivation. And, you know, the Packers are going to be pumping him for information about, you know, the Seattle offense and anything that they can get, you know, from the inside. Now, they play Seattle every year, it seems like, so they know him pretty well, but they don't know him from the inside. And so, that I think Michael will be useful. I can't make any judgments about him because we're seeing him come in during the middle of a season. He hasn't had a chance to really become integrated with the team and kind of grow with them through training camp and or off-season workouts. But he does seem to be quick. And at this point, you know, if you're going to make a decision, you might go with him as opposed to trying to get Eddie Lacy back on a one-year deal. I'm not sure ultimately how they're going to do that. I don't think Michael's had quite the injury history either that Lacy has had. I've seen enough from him that I'd like to see a full season, but the way things are right now, I just don't think they're advised to try to create a running game. There is one more thing I will add about the Packers' backfield situation, and this is something I mentioned today when I wrote to one of our longtime listeners, Fred White. Fred is, boy, he's been with us for a long time and been a good friend of the podcast. And he wrote today about James Starks, and his thinking was that, well, you know, they've had some changes in the interior line. You know, Sitton's gone. You know, they're playing now with a rookie tackle is playing right guard for them. Lang is out. You know, kind of cutting James Starks some slack. I like James Starks. He was really important in 2010. He's been a good player for them, a dependable player for a long time. But this guy's spent. I just, you know, you mentioned earlier, Dave, about the one play where he kind of ran parallel to the line and then he didn't turn it up into the hole and wound up losing yardage. I think that was a third down play. And my sense is that it wasn't that he missed the hole. I don't think he has the burst to, you know, plant his foot and cut up and get to the hole. He just seems kind of lumbering, kind of slow. I you know, he's 31, which for a running back in the NFL, you're beyond the curve. A lot of guys don't make it that long. And it's unfortunate because, you know, he was so important in 2010 and he has given them a lot of good years. I like the guy. But I think this is the end of the line for him. And that's why, you know, I hope that they maybe keep Kristen Michael around and that Ty Montgomery isn't maybe a fixture in the backfield, but they do that on a regular basis. I still kind of cringe every time they want him to run between the tackles. But I like that element, having him back there. I will not be comfortable ever with Randall Cobb in the backfield, No. But I do like Ty Montgomery because he's a bigger guy back there. It just... James Starks, I don't know what you do with him, but I think right now he's just taking up a roster spot.
You know, I watched Dallas, and they have a fullback, the running back, big lineman, and they hand off, and it works for him. I mean, Ezekiel, if he's not running for 10-plus yards, he's at least falling forward for 4. That looks great if you have it. That is not the way the Packers are built. And so I think if you pass 60-70% of the time, and when you run... You run out of, and maybe there are more passes than they are, you know, just short passes. But, you know, you do the draw plays or the, I guess Rodgers isn't mobile enough to do sort of the, what do you call that, where you hand off. You're not sure if the running back has it.
The read option play.
Read option play. You know, but, you know, that's how you run the ball. You don't do the traditional what Dallas is doing is under the center, hand off. Let your fullback lead and give it to your running back. If we set that up for next year with Lacy in a different line, you know, have at it. But this year, no. You know, your running back is there to either block, go out for the pass, or be a misdirection sort of thing. And if they can figure that out, I think they have an offense that's good enough to stay in all the games to the end of the season and be dangerous in the playoffs. I'm hitting this point too much, but I just don't understand why McCarthy doesn't see that and stick with that. Do you agree with me that it doesn't feel like that's what they're doing? And they should. That is their best option to win. And I feel like the people on radio shows and everything, they're saying similar things. And every once in a while we see glimpses of it. We saw it in Philly in the first half. That's exactly what I'm looking for. And they seem to not. It's like that's the difference from the norm. They want to get back to the norm, and they just don't have it.
Well, I agree with that part of it. I would point out that Ryan Wood, the writer for PackersNews.com, has been a champion on this, I think, longer than anybody, that saying that they need to throw the ball. That's who they are. At least this season, that's who they are.
Yeah.
It's not who they want to be, but that's who they are. And it seems that, you know, accepting it, you know, owning it, and just going with it. The one thing I will disagree with you on is you were saying you think they should pass it 60 or 70% of the time. They're already doing that. I think they're around 70% passing right now. What my contention is they should continue doing that and probably up it even by a little more. I would not be disappointed if they went 75% passing. And I'm not trying to say this is should become their offense, you know, for the rest of Aaron Rodgers' career. But given what they have this year, given the circumstances that they're facing, I think they are so much more in sync, so much more in rhythm when they just go with that rhythm short passing game. If you put three wides and Montgomery in the backfield, that's essentially four receivers. They can do a lot of different things from that alignment. And if you got a tight end in the game, that's essentially five. You got three wides, a tight end, and a running back. And with given Montgomery, they don't know if they're going to run with him or if he's going to come out of the backfield. And you know he can catch the ball and he can maneuver in space. We see that on kickoffs. The guy is good with the ball under his arm, and he's a real weapon. So replacing the running game with that, you know, 4-yard pass to Montgomery that maybe becomes a 6-yard gain. I'll take that. Yeah. I'll take that all the time.
The field. Yes, yeah, absolutely. That's,
I got no problem at all with that. And this game, we saw a 98-yard drive and an 89-yard drive. And those were the two critical, especially the 98-yard drive. I think I heard that was the longest in Aaron Rodgers' career.
I thought it was the second or tied for the longest. That's right.
All right. But it was unusual for him. Let's put it that way. And I think if they're going to win, that's the way they're going to do it. They're going to have those long drives, time-consuming ball control drives, because they got to keep that defense off the field. The defense, I don't want to, you know, rip these guys too bad, because they're playing without their number one corner. He's done for the season. They're playing with their best defensive player, as you know, Alan Barber, you know, cleaned his clock in Philly, and the guy's shoulder's bad, and you know, he didn't even show up on the stat sheet. Clay Matthews didn't even show up on the stat sheet because of that, you know, sprain in his AC joint. So you know, he's highly limited. You got 56 running around out there. Now, granted, the guy's, you know, got 6.5 sacks, and he's not a complete disaster, but he's a shell of the kind of player that he once was. They just, you know, they have an injury to Jake Ryan, who I like Jake Ryan, but you know, Jake Ryan is playing hurt. He's not, you know, what he was. This was his first game back. He showed well at times, but they also take him off the field because of injury. And then you got Nick Perry playing with a club. I mean, that was an enormous club that he came out with in the second half. He hurt himself in the first half. He hurt his hand. I don't know how long that's going to be a factor for them. So, you know, they're so limited right now because of injury. And I just think the more you can keep the defense off the field, and that means your offense possessing the ball, controlling the ball, that's going to give you the best chance of winning. If you're going to do that, though, a lot of teams will choose to run the ball to possess it, but they don't have an offensive line that can do that. They don't have a running game right now that can do that. So the way they're going to have to do it is through a short, controlled rhythm passing game that's going to take a lot of time off the clock and going to keep the defense off the field. I think that's their formula for success. I don't know if that'll be good enough to beat Seattle, but I think that's what they're going to have to do to give them the best chance of winning.
Yeah, I might as well give the offensive line some kudos now, because we may not after the Seattle game. But one thing that's another positive is I thought the offensive line played pretty good, maybe not in the running game, but in the passing game. And I think this is a great game to make the argument that guards, offensive line guards, are not that important. I don't think we've missed Sitton at all. And to think of paying him a lot, and maybe we got a first down with Starks on that, you know, when we went, or with Bukowski, we went 4th-and-2. Maybe Sitton gets us that first down, so maybe I should take it back. But from what I can tell, it seems like Lane Taylor and Spriggs are doing an adequate job. So why would you ever overpay for an offensive line guard?
Well,
center, maybe same thing. I don't.
Unless it's Will Whitaker that you're throwing out there like they did in, what, 2005? You know, I mean, that guy was a disaster.
I suppose there is a low.
Yeah.
You know, if you put me out there, you will find I'm exposed. But, you know, have you noticed the loss of Lang or Sitton? I mean, these guys were like the anchors of our line, and now we have Taylor and Spriggs. And yet,
that's a great point,
right?
Dave. Lane Taylor graded out. I don't know if you read the Pro Football Focus grades, and I know there's some dispute about how credible those things are, but a lot of people refer to them, and I look at them after every game. And Lane Taylor graded out really well this past week. I know Bob McGinn is pounding the drum every chance he gets to mention how they let Josh Sitton go. You know, it really isn't that big of a factor. And then when you can do a credible job by taking an undersized rookie tackle and moving him inside to play right guard, I don't know that it's a smart deal to re-sign Lang, especially given his age and injury history. I think maybe, you know, Thompson's got a point. You know, it's not smart to overpay for guards. I think that's a good point that you raise. It'll be interesting to see what they do in the offseason when it comes to Lang.
Now, if you're Dallas again and you run the ball like you do, then maybe you pull your guards and you have a lot of those type of plays, then maybe that's different. But if you need to just keep your defensive lineman in front of you and give Rodgers just the little bit of chance to scramble, this offense doesn't need really good guards. And so, you know, whether it's Spriggs, Taylor, anybody else, it seems like it's just fine. But Don Barclay's playing in there, like you say. That's true.
Yeah,
there's a point where you know, it is bad enough. But
yeah, Don Barclay's, I mean, that's an example of a guy that was a problem, and he was letting guys through. That's a situation they might have to fix. They may have to get, you know, switch him out and get some depth. But again, it's going to be interesting to see what they do when it comes to making that decision on TJ Lang. I think when they got rid of Sitton, I assume that they would just, you know, bring back Lang, or maybe the idea is going to be that they'll, go with Treader. You know, I think Treader's deal is up as well, and maybe they'll opt for him and then let Lang walk, given that he's, I think, 29 or 30. And he's going to be expensive, and he's, you know, been dinged up a fair amount in his career.
Yeah. Yeah, he certainly has. So, yeah, if you can save that money and sign one of your, you know, position players, or heaven forbid you sign a free agent that could give this offense a little bit more oomph, you know, if you had a speedy receiver or something, that maybe that's worth paying for guard. But, you know, we're going to see a team come into Lambeau Field who has underpaid their linemen, and that has cost them.
Yeah, that's true.
Got, it is important to have a good enough offensive lineman, but I think your tackles can really hurt you. We've seen Brett Favre years where the tackles were so bad that, you know, even with his ability, you couldn't do anything. But guard, center, maybe it's worth underpaying a little bit. But
Bakhtiari has, you know, I tell you, that guy thought played a great game. Now, this was one of those games where it wasn't really conducive to a pass rush, I think. Bakhtiari was just controlling his man, and, you know, he got a big deal at the beginning of the season, and I think he's probably earned it. So if you're going to pay somebody, you probably pay the tackles, and I think that's worked out pretty well so far for the Packers. One thing I wanted to mention before we, you know, get too far away from the offense here, Aaron Rodgers is quietly, you know, putting together a pretty good season, and the first six games, it was crisis. And, you know, we were talking about, everyone's talking about the fact that the guy just didn't seem like himself. And it had been like the equivalent of a full season, and he hadn't had a passer rating over 100. And now he's got three games in a row where he's over 100. In fact, this game, he was just a shade under 109. It was his lowest passer rating in 3 weeks. I was looking at his season stats. You know, his quarterback rating for the season is 98.5 for the season.
And he leads the league in, like, yards and touchdowns or something, they said during the broadcast. Is that right?
I don't know if he leads in yards, but he's got 29 touchdowns this season. That just seems – that's a lot of touchdowns. We're three quarters of the way through. you know, I'm not a math expert, but if you extrapolate that out over a full season, that would be just a touch under 40. And that's a hell of a season. He's got 3,200 yards, so he's on pace to go to have 4,000 plus yards, 40-ish touchdowns, and a passer rating that's just under 100. That's a really good season, and it just hasn't felt like that because of, you know, the kind of the crappy way it got off, and then it was kind of inconsistent after that. But he's put together, you know, a really good kind of middle third of the season. They're going to need him down. There's no question. They're going to need him down the stretch if they're going to catch the Lions, who surprised the hell out of me. I did not think that they were going to win by two touchdowns in New Orleans. I wasn't sure the Saints were going to win because Saints aren't that good of a team, but they do play well at home. And I'm still suspect, you know, we saw the Lions in person. They didn't seem like a great team, but they, you know, went down there and they controlled that game. I think we got to start thinking the Lions are for real.
Yeah, we'll see. This has been a lot of years of Detroit showing you something and then disappearing at the end of the season. So I'm not going to give Detroit any benefit of the doubt until, you know, it beating us would be a big step, winning a playoff game, all that. I'm not a believer. We saw Detroit firsthand. And unless, you know, they've just been healthier than everyone else, I didn't think they were anything special. So I'm not worried about Detroit yet. But
They got Jim Bob Cooter as their offensive coordinator.
That is impressive. I thought he was in the movie Waterboy. Yeah.
I hit a Jim Bob Cooter. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was in Waterboy. Hey, before we take the break, just as far as stats, I just looked real quick and I'm just eyeballing this. Yeah, Rodgers, I thought in the broadcast they said he was leading more categories, but in completions he's behind Derek Carr, Kirk Cousins, and Drew Brees is having quite a season. Attempts, he's nearly the top. He's number two behind Drew Brees, who's got 500. Rodgers has 479. Yards, Rodgers is seventh, so he's fairly down on yards. But touchdowns, he's thrown for 29 touchdowns, and only Drew Brees, I see, is thrown for 30. So, I mean, he's in the leader. His quarterback rating is, as you said, 98.5. We've got Derek Carr is over 100. Matt Ryan and Drew Brees are also over 100. Kirk Cousins is about 99, almost 100. So he's had a very disappointing year, but he's among the leaders, again, in many different number of different stats. So it's our expectations for him are super high.
You know, it just goes to show that, you know, when a guy is basically having a top seven passing season in the NFL, and if you look across the major stats, including passer rating, yardage, touchdowns, fewer intercepts, you know, all the key categories, and yet somehow it's kind of a disappointing year. I mean, what does that say about Aaron Rodgers? What does it say about us as fans when it just doesn't feel like he's having that good of a season, but damn it, he is.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine, I mean, some of these guys at the bottom half, we would be beside ourselves. So you're right, we are spoiled. But, you know, we have high expectations from someone who has shown the ability to have those high expectations. So, you know, just because you're good, I don't think my expectations are – I don't give you a pass, right? I mean, every football year is precious to me. So I want you to perform every single year or get off – you know, and let someone else step in. But I think, you know, he has putting together a good season. And I think if we run the table, someone proposed the question, you know, could he win the MVP? I mean, unless someone else really keeps going, like Derek Carr and some of these guys.
Derek Carr, he's had a great year.
He's had, you know, unless he falls apart, he certainly could be in the conversation.
Well, just as we've said on this podcast, expectations are premeditated resentments. And that certainly does seem to be the case when it comes to, well, to most things, but certainly to Aaron Rodgers in this particular instance.
We should take a break.
Yeah, I think we'll take a break, as we always do on Packers Therapy. Allows us to wet our collective whistles, whatever that means. And we will come back to talk more about the Packers' victory over the Houston Texans. We'll look ahead to the Seattle game, which probably the most important game of the season, the pivotal game of the season for the Packers. We'll also do the betting lines, maybe a little pop culture, all kinds of good stuff coming up. More Packers Therapy with Chris and Dave right ahead. Back with More Packers Therapy. It's Chris and Dave. Going to talk a little more about the Packers win to move to 6-6, beating the Houston Texans. Talk a little more about the defensive side of the ball, Dave. I was really impressed with the play of number 42, Morgan Burnett. He looked to me very active. He was laying the wood to people around the ball a lot. Well, I mean, he had the fumble recovery. I just thought that he did a really good job. It was a solid game from him. In fact, I thought both safeties, I thought, played pretty well in this game. Did you see that as well? Do you think he had or is having a strong season?
Ooh, you just added a detail there that's hard for me to agree with. I thought Morgan Burnett and HaHa Clinton-Dix had a very nice game. I thought the defense holding to 13 points is a good defensive effort. How much the snow had an impact. I mean, Osweiler really is not a great quarterback either.
No.
So a lot of things went in the defense's favor. Now, it's nice that they weren't able to just run the ball down their throats. We've lost to worse quarterbacks because they just kept running the ball. So they were able to do some nice things stopping the run. But I thought whatever passing game they had, I thought Burnett and Clinton-Dix were very active and the kind of safeties I thought they would be, real anchors for this defense, and other players could make plays around them. I thought Gunter had a nice game and, you know, was never really exposed that much. I'm worried about the linebackers. You know, Joe Thomas, if you're going to run the ball, I mean, if we had to play a big running team, Joe Thomas as a starter is a problem. I think he's okay in coverage, maybe can chase a guy okay, but if you're running at him, he's too light. So I'm definitely not sold that this defense has enough talent to contend. But I thought for the two safeties, I thought this was a very nice game for them. I'm not ready to say Morgan Burnett's had a nice season. I feel like he's a real hit or miss guy. But he's in a position where I think safeties are so important. And I guess Clinton-Dix is a first rounder. Morgan Burnett is maybe a third rounder.
I thought he was fourth.
He might have been fourth. Yeah, so I'm just surprised they don't really make that an emphasis on the defense. It seems like over the years, the Packers have kind of belittled that position and not made that an area of emphasis. But I think with Burnett and Clinton-Dix, behind them, it's a little shakier. I think Micah Hyde had a rough game.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, he is not he in
had,
a good
position. He had one nice play.
One nice play, but if he's got to be in coverage, I feel like he's a guy that sort of allows 15-yard catches for first downs to happen, but he's the guy that makes a tackle, so the 15 doesn't turn into a touchdown, but he rarely stops that 15-yard completion. He fills the roster and is a good football player. He's a smart guy. We used to love him.
Oh, yeah.
I watched him yesterday. I just felt like, man, Micah Hyde is just not a special player at all. And but getting back to your original point, Burnett, Clinton-Dix, I thought they had very nice games. Again, I think against Seattle, that's going to be a much more difficult test.
You know, I think the reason that they kept around Bryce and Evans is because I think Micah Hyde's on – if anybody's on the hot seat, I think that's a guy that is on the hot seat when it comes to his future in Green Bay. They no longer have him returning punts, which is something I thought he was pretty effective at doing. But he does seem to be a liability in coverage. And, you know, his speed was always kind of a question mark. And, you know, he's gotten a few years older, taken some hits. He's had some injuries. As I recall, he's had, I think, hamstring injuries to both of his legs. And the combination of those things may have made a guy who had marginal speed to begin with maybe have put him in the other direction. And the measurables on Bryce and Evans are really good. But we saw for both of those guys, they're just not very smart football players right now. You know, it was Bryce twice got in the way of Montgomery when he's returning kicks.
Yeah.
Twice, you know, and if he gets out of the way, I don't know that Montgomery returns it, but he probably gets more yardage.
Yeah, I don't remember Desmond Howard running into anybody, you know, on his touchdowns for kick kickoff returns and things like that, right?
That's not going to help you. No. if your own guy is getting in the way. But you know, those guys were undrafted for a reason, I suppose. And I'm just wondering if they hope that one of those guys is going to be good enough that they can take the role that Hyde has been filling for them. They're going to have to do something because I think Sam Shields is done. I think that's pretty much assured. Randall and Rollins up and down again in this game. I know they've both had injuries. They're working their way back. This may be the sophomore slump for both of those guys. I thought they were both better last year. You have to hope that they're going to be better, but man, if that first year was the aberration and you're not going to have Shields, it's going to be tough in the defensive backfield.
Yeah, it is.
There's no doubt about that. So I think that's in the off season. I think that is an area that's going to be undergoing a lot of flux going forward. Their situation too in the front seven, Clay Matthews. I guess he's under contract, but it seems every time there's something that's, you know, like when he busted up his hand, he's had the constant problems with the hamstrings. It's just so hard to go into a season thinking you have a plan when your best player is so prone to not being available. That's a huge issue. Dayton Jones, I don't think, is going to be around. Nick Perry with another injury, I don't know if he's going to be around. I think there's going to be a lot of change on the defensive side of the ball. I think there's going to have to be, because right now that's the side of the ball you have to try to hide. Pardon the pun. I think you really have to do anything you can to keep the offense on the field, just to protect your defense against, you know, crappy offenses like Houston's. Probably get away with it okay. But as well as I thought Burnett played this game, he's not consistently that good. I think he's okay, and I think Dix is okay, but they're not good enough that you can count on him every week. And that's other than Mike Daniels. Just think about it for a second. Other than Mike Daniels, who's the consistent defender that the Packers have? Can you think of anybody?
No, I can't right now. I mean, Matthews would be pretty consistent, but not with the injury. But Mike Daniels, I don't see him on the tackle chart. I mean, he played, I think, but he was and I suppose his play is more important than just the tackle chart, but you'd like to see a couple tackles on there. You know, Mike Pinnell had a big play. He had a big tackle for a loss. Dean Lowry had a couple.
Dean Lowry had
a couple of plays,
He had a sack, and he had a pressure. Now, I did not follow his college career, but those that do, my older son said that as a collegiate, you know, that was routine for him. Huh. But he – now, maybe it's a bit of a bias, right? You know, a white defensive lineman, so maybe I'm predisposed to think he's not very good. But he – you know, I thought he played well. But how much of that, you know, was the weather conditions slowing the game down to a place where he could have – you know, more of an impact? I'm not sure. I thought Daniels played well because he was taken on double teams. He was making penetration in the backfield. He was putting pressure on the quarterback. You know, I think Mike Daniels does things every week that aren't glamorous, but he's the guy who's turning the play inside so that, you know, other guys are making the play. He's the guy that's creating the disruption in the middle that's clogging things up, so that the linebackers can flow and make that play in the backfield. So I think Mike Daniels has been a good sign. A good signing, and he's worth the money that they're paying him, and he's available every week.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think his play is always, he's got a high motor. Whether he tackles or not, I think he has an impact on the game. But could you imagine if we had a first-round pick that actually showed up and had an impact on a game, much less this game, any game? I mean, Kenny Clark, I think I see him once in a while. I see 97 on the field, and I think, who's 97? And, oh, that's Kenny Clark. Apparently they must like him in the building, but, man,
he's teams... so young, though. He's like 21, and you can tell his body hasn't really developed yet. I mean, this is a guy
that's... Why draft him? I mean, we need a guy right now that can make a difference. I mean, there are teams in the league right now whose first-round pick, I mean, Dallas has got two of them. I keep bringing up Dallas, which I can't stand. They've got picks who actually are making an impact on the game today. Can you imagine having that luxury, this, you know, of having an extra player that actually made a difference in this game?
I mean, well, but Dallas Clark was drafting at the top of the draft, though. I mean, wasn't Ezekiel Elliott like the fifth overall pick or something like that?
Ezekiel might have been their Crockett might not have, you know, he was down lower. But, you know, it's just been a while since, especially if you're going to only build through the draft, you'd like to see your first-round draft pick make an impact. And Kenny Clark was pretty much invisible this game.
Well, you know, I think he was one of those guys that they drafted because of the high ceiling. You know, I mean, baseball does this all the time. You know, the scouts see potential, and they know it's not going to be there right away, but they draft him because they think that they're going to be able to, you know, 2 years from now, that guy is going to be a great player when he is in the weight room. And you know, because he's at 21 years old, you're not really fully developed at that point. And, you know, you get more experience on top of that. You're coming to your physical prime. I'm just wondering if they won't try to convince BJ Raji to come out of retirement. I mean, he stepped away from the game for a year. He didn't retire. And it makes me wonder if they're going to, you know, because they are getting so many changes on defense, if they're not going to try to reach out to him and see if his aunt or somebody in his family was sick and he was going to be around to help them out or something or other. I'm just wondering if they're going to try to get him back because they could really use some help on the defensive line, especially when Mike Pinnell appears as though he's looking at a 10-game suspension.
Yeah. I suppose it's nice to have such a good team that you don't need to rely on your first-round draft picks each year. But I had to go back a few weeks to find a stat for Kenny Clark. Can you guess how many tackles Kenny Clark has for the season so far, including Houston? Over/under is on that one?
I'm gonna say
unassisted
tackles.
There's combined, and then they have total and assists. So I'll even give you combined. I'll get combined tackles. And he did play from game one.
Yeah, I'll say 15.
You're exactly right. 15 combined, 10 tackles, 5 assists. The most tackles he had was against Detroit, the game we saw. He had 4 tackles. Tackles for lost we have, so we have no fumble recoveries, no sacks. Just 15 combined tackles. So, you know, yeah, it's great. It's great to have such a good team. You don't need to upgrade your defense with your reverse round draft picks. That's what the Packers have. So just making that point that Kenny Clark has been invisible so far. He may be a Hall of Famer someday, but his first year has been uneventful.
Well, that's the thing. You know, when you're good enough that you wind up, you know, drafting, you know, 25 or, you know, 26, whatever it is every year, that's, you know, it gets – after a while, that, you know, that begins to show. But that's the way the league is set up. It's set up, you know, that the good teams don't stay good for long, and the bad teams draft higher. They get better picks, and they get to rebuild their rosters faster. I mean, that's kind of the business model of the NFL, and it generally works. I mean, it takes some teams longer, like the Browns has never seemed to get better. I'm not really sure what to make of that one. But most of the teams, after they draft high for a long time, they usually get better. I mean, the Lions are kind of an example of that. You know, it turned out that, you know, if you are crappy long enough, you'll eventually get some good players. And that's, you know, just the way they want this to work out. So Kenny Clark, I don't know. I guess I'm not ready to cashier him until he's had a couple of seasons to both physically and, you know, professionally mature. I mean, that's kind of the deal with him. I don't think he was a finished product coming out of UCLA, right? Is that where he came out of?
Right. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, before we get on to the next parts of this, Dave, let's look at Seattle coming up. And I think I mentioned before the break that I think this is the pivotal game of the season for the Packers. I think they can lose this game if Detroit is going to go down to Dallas and lose, and they have to also, I think, play at New York against the Giants. So they may have a couple of losses you know, coming on their season yet anyway. So if the Packers do lose to Seattle, you know, they could still have a chance of making that last game against the Lions, you know, before the division championship. But I don't think that they can count on that the way the Lions have been playing. So that makes this game against Seattle, I think, the critical game. I don't think the season's over, but I think this is as much as any game in the regular season is a must win. I think this is probably it.
Yeah, I agree. It's not just for the win and loss. It's just the psyche of this team. If it can come out and beat Seattle, then I think it could run the table. If Seattle comes out and asserts their will like they did against Carolina this week, then I think the team breaks. I think this is the kind of team that could really break the Packers, both offensively. We could expose our backfield. We don't get much of a rush. And I think we could find, you know, their defense has always been tough. If they sack Rodgers, you know, four or five times and there's a bunch of three and outs, I think this team, this could be either, I mean, the volatility in this game is huge. It could be a game changer, or we could hear boos by halftime. I'm afraid to say, Chris, I really think that this is going to be a rough game for the Packers. If they would have played better against Houston, and maybe if it snows, like really snows and slows their defense down more, maybe we've got a shot. But I just feel the Packers are primed to get whipped by Seattle.
Well, Seattle's got problems. I mean, you mentioned earlier in the podcast about the difficulties that they have had on their offensive line. That's not been a good scene. And they've lost Earl Thomas for the season. He broke his leg in the game last night. And so one of their really good defensive players is going to be out. So, you know, I think some things are making this a possible win for the Packers. I don't want to be, you know, too pie in the sky here, but I don't think this is an unwinnable game. Let's put it that way. Not that I'm predicting a victory, but I do think the Packers have a puncher's chance in this one because Seattle's got some flaws. Don't forget, this is a team that was held to 5 points, a field goal and a safety, a couple weeks ago when they played Tampa. Now, I know they played really well against Carolina yesterday, but Carolina is a team that's, I don't know what's going on there. This is a team
crazy,
that was in
right?
It was in the Super Bowl, and you know Ron Rivera. What you have to fire him, right? And the same thing in Arizona. They're not going to make the playoffs. You should, you know, fire the coach of the year from last year. So, yeah, I mean these things happen. So yes, they whipped Carolina yesterday. Seattle did, but I don't know necessarily if that means as much as it would have last year when Carolina was 15-1. So I give the Packers a chance. I don't think they're going to win, but I do give them a chance. I guess if I was trying to put percentages on it, I give them a 25% chance of winning. I don't think that's not great, but I think it's certainly doable. You're playing at home. There's some flaws in Seattle, but it's that damn Russell Wilson. You know, he always seems to. I guess he does it against a lot of teams, but against the Packers, he's always seemed to be able to hit that key pass when he has to.
Yeah.
It's so frustrating, and I would think it's just something about the Packers if I hadn't seen the guy play at Wisconsin when he always seemed to be able to find a guy downfield when he needed him to. If he's just that kind of player, he's pesky that way, and so I'm expecting Seattle to win, but I do think there it is conceivable. I would not be shocked if the Packers could find a way to win. I just don't think they have enough horses to get it done.
I guess the only thing I can see is if their offense comes back to a very quick passing game, neutralizes their rush, maybe attacks their defensive backfield and gets away from Sherman, or you know potentially we could get a hit on Sherman and one of our guys can, you know, give him a shot like we did in the NFC Championship game. Those are the kind of things I think need to happen. But I wonder if we're going to try and run the ball, you know, get behind. And we got to get a quick start. So, yeah, I don't think it's impossible. I'm very doubtful. This season, to me, just has kind of a dark cloud over it. And this would be in a narrative of a dark season, losing Ruff to Seattle would fit. I just don't see this as a comeback or a really pleasant turnaround kind of season. I don't see it in this team. I don't feel like constructed in a way that can make that happen. So given that I think I'm going to be disappointed, I think this is a great time for it to happen. I think Seattle wins by 20.
I think Seattle's going to win. I don't think three touchdowns, though. I would say more like, 13 points, something like that, where I could see it being, 30 to 17, something along those lines. The weather right now, the advanced forecast for Green Bay looks like a chance of snow and in middle 20s. So kind of a typical, early to mid December Sunday afternoon. And is this a 3:25 start?
Yeah, it's an afternoon game. Yeah.
Yeah. So they'll be playing into darkness. So you're probably looking at low 20s by the time the game is wrapping up around 6:30, something like that. But what would not surprise me if they do wind up losing like we both expect them to. The following week they got the Bears. I would think they would bounce back there. Go back to 500. I don't know what to expect from the Vikings. That team has been all over the board this year. They have not played well the last 6 weeks or so, but they still got a pretty good defense. But that one's going to be at home too for the Packers. It wouldn't shock me to see them win that game. And then you got the final against the Lions. And so if the Lions cooperate and they lose on the road to Dallas and on the road at New York, then that game comes down to winner-take-all at Ford Field. I'd have to say the Lions would be favored because Packers never seem to play well in Detroit, and the Lions have a really potent offense. I think that one's set up for them to win, the Lions to win. So I would definitely see a situation where the Packers do have a chance in the final game, but I just don't like the way they're set up for them on the road at Detroit.
Yeah, this is a tough season. I mean, it's still in it, and this week will make a huge difference. If we win this game, then I'll come out talking different. But and Detroit's a long way off. Lots can happen. I mean, Stafford gets hurt, and all of a sudden Detroit's in a different place.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that. NFL, man. I mean, things just change so damn quick when somebody you're counting on is not there, and that just changes the whole complexion going forward.
Yeah, even their psyche. I mean, they haven't played Dallas yet. If they go and if they beat Dallas, then we have to really wonder about Detroit and whether they're for real and how the season's gone. But they take a beating against Dallas, like everyone else sort of has, and maybe that changes their trajectory a little bit. So this is a huge week, both Detroit for Green Bay, Seattle, all the above. I mean, I feel like this is a pivot point for the rest of the season.
And that means one thing. It's time for the betting lines.
I agree. All right. Are you ready, sir, to see who won last week? I'll go through these relatively quick because we do have a winner, and it was down to the coin flip,
ooh,
as it were. So last week against the Texans, the issues we talked about were number of receivers. How many receivers were going to catch a ball? Because we thought there were a lot of receivers that caught the week before.
Mm-hmm. I think it were 8 or 9 the week before. It was a big number.
It was a big number. You had set the line at 6.5, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There were 7 catches, so the over had it. Good line at 6.5. I guess who caught one different than last week? Maybe Richard Rodgers had an additional one. All the usual cast of characters, but Richard Rodgers had a couple. Rutkowski had one, so we had 7 guys catch a ball.
Now Janice did not have a catch. She may have had a catch the week before, but he did have that nice reverse.
He did, and I like that kind of play, a misdirection, not much used during the season. Something for defenses to think about a little bit, a jet sweep to Janice. Like some creativity like that. I like that play a lot. Went for 19 yards. Number 2, how many receiving yards will Devontae Adams have after his big week?
Ouch.
You set the line at 78, and it was the under with one catch for 17 yards.
Oh, man, that's, yeah, that was not – although they tried like hell to get in the ball. They passed to him seven times, but just one catch.
They did. They didn't realize it was snowing outside. How many running back touchdowns will there be that's not Aaron Rodgers, and you set the line at 0.5, and it was one. Ripkowski had a another touchdown rush, so he's lighting it up for running backs in Green Bay.
Your name has to be Aaron in order to score a rushing touchdown.
Rush a touchdown, that's right. How many sacks will Green Bay have? I think I was thinking how many times will they sack a Houston Texan quarterback. You set the line at 1.5. The line is, Mike says it's 2. We had 2 sacks. Who had the 2 sacks for? I know Peppers had 1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's to become, what, the 5th all-time sack leader in National Football League history.
Yeah, he passed. Was it Strahan he passed?
Mm-hmm, right, yep.
And then Dean Lowry. So he's on his way to setting his own record with his first sack, I think, of his career.
So Peppers passed Dean Lowry on the all-time list?
No, Dean is setting up his...
I thought he had passed.
No, yeah. he's got to start somewhere, so he got his first.
Got it.
Number 5, what will Osweiler's quarterback rating be? You set the line at 90.
Now, you scoffed at me when I set it at 90, but what was his rating, Dave?
I see 97.6.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I got that wrong. I got that. Number 6, how many points will Houston have? You set the line at 13. Oh, no, I'm sorry, 24.5. They had 13, so the under had that one. I had that wrong. Number 7, how many carries will Kristen Michael have this week? You set the line at 7.5. I thought it'd be less. I think if they would have had the over, I would have been pretty excited, but they did. The over had it. He had 9 carries, but kind of an uninspiring 19 yards for 2.1 carries.
I had a nice week setting these lines.
You did fine. You did fine. 7.5, we said who would win the toss and what would they do. We have found out that the Packers won the toss and they deferred. So they did not kind of go with what that happened the week before, scoring early. They went ahead and deferred to try to get the ball first after halftime, and that would have worked, but they went 3 and out, got 1 yard, ended up punting, and then Houston got a touchdown. So that blew up in their face. And then the tiebreaker was how many rushing yards for Aaron Rodgers. You said 6 yards. I said 7 yards. He rushed for
16, right?
16 yards, correct. So at least I had more than you. But
he moved around a lot better than I thought he would given the injury.
Yeah, I thought so too. But he definitely does not look as mobile, certainly as he did it early against Philly and other parts of his career. So something to pay attention to. All right, are you ready for the game against Seattle? This is a big one.
Now, this is very important because the people who win the betting lines, and who did win the betting lines?
Oh, you know what? Yes. So now we know who we got the flip. Jared Stevenson won with 6 correct, including it was came down to the tiebreaker, as I said, or the coin flip. We didn't know who won the coin flip. It would have been Richard Durain would have won had Houston won the coin flip, but it was Jared Stevenson. He has got the hotel and casino suite by himself.
Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino, available for your enjoyment in Las Vegas, Laughlin, and soon in Reno. That's right. So that's what the winner of the weekly betting lines gets. What are our gambling propositions this week, Dave?
All right, I've got 8.5 ready to go. Mike, get ready to set these down. Number 1, how many receiving yards would Jordy Nelson have?
Now, 8.5, is that an homage to the great Federico Fellini, the Italian filmmaker?
That's amazing, because it's not. No.
Okay, I didn't think so. Right. Okay, so how many yards for
receiving
Jordy
yards
Nelson?
For Jordy Nelson, yes. He had a big game this week. Can he repeat it next week?
Had 118 yards this week. I don't think we're going to see that against the likes of Richard Sherman
Packers like to avoid really good corners, right? So
Was it 2 years ago when they played at Seattle and they did not throw at all to the side of the – and I think that was Jordy Nelson that did not get any balls thrown his direction, I believe.
That's right. Yeah. I thought against – Is it Chad Norman at the Redskins? We hardly threw his direction either. They seem to really want to favor away and pick on somebody else. I mean, almost to an extreme. So keep that in mind when you're picking the lines here.
Yeah, it might have been. It was Josh Norman.
Oh, I'm sorry. Who did I say?
Chad. But it could have been Chad Norman. Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. Whoever it is, he should be a defensive back in the NFL.
Different game. Yeah, yeah. I know what I'm talking about.
I think it's going to be much tougher for Jordy this week. And I don't have to get to the number of catches, but I just have to get the yardage. So I'm going to say I put the yardage at 46 for Jordy Nelson.
46 yards, huh? I'm going to take the over on that one. Number two, how many sacks do you think Green Bay will have on a Seattle quarterback, assuming Russell Wilson? Given their line, you said their line is suspect, how many sacks do you think we'll get this week?
Wow, that's – well,
he's mobile.
I would – but that's exactly what I'm trying to calculate here because, yeah, their line is problematic. But when you've got a guy that can move around as well as Russell Wilson does, that mitigates that a lot. I'm going to put the sacks at I'm going to put it at 1.5.
1.5. All right, I'm going to take the over on that one. Number three, how many total plays, carries, and receptions will Ty Montgomery have? I say that because I feel like he's the key to this game. Keeping this dink and dunk alive, you're going to have to use it against Seattle, and Ty is going to be instrumental. But don't let that influence the number. What do you think his total points will be?
So runs plus receptions.
Correct.
Ooh, let me put that number at 7.5.
All right, I'm going to take the over. Number four. Aaron Rodgers' quarterback rating. What do you think? Keep it up around 100 or higher against Seattle? Oh,
I don't think so. You know, I know they're without Earl Thomas. I know that you know, Seattle's had some issues, but they're still a pretty potent defense. They're talking chance of snow. I'm gonna set the line for Aaron Rodgers' quarterback rating at 86.
Oh, man, that's low. I'm going to take the over on that one. I wanted to take under. Rushing yards. How many rushing yards do you think Seattle as a team, including Russell Wilson, will have? And just to give you a sense, they had a big week against Carolina. They ran, let's see, they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different guys run 29 carries for 240 yards.
So I'm guessing not the number of carries, I'm guessing the yardage.
Total yards, yes.
Including Russell Wilson.
Correct. Now, one of them, Tyler Lockett, had a 75-yard, I think he's a wide receiver, so it must have been a reverse or a jet sweep or something. But he had a long of 75. But 240 for Seattle. How many think they get this week?
Yeah, and this is all told, huh?
All told.
Yeah, Packer run defense is not as potent as it was early in the season. I mean, it was otherworldly the first quarter of the season. Then it's kind of – ever since that Dallas game, they've been a lot more ordinary. So I'm going to put that number at 127.
127. Definitely take the over on that one. Number six, how many – number of personal fouls will there be in this game? I feel like this
both,
is like,
I mean, the total both ways.
Both ways, yep. Either on Seattle or the Packers.
That's good because these are two teams that don't like each other much.
No, and I think could get chippy.
And it's also a game that's very important, certainly to the Packers, but probably both ways. Personal fouls, I'm going to put that at 2.5.
Oh, 2.5. All right, I'll take the under. I thought you'd do a half. Even 1.5, I'd have taken over. 2.5, that's a high number.
Okay.
How many?
Now, we're talking personal fouls, like, you know, block in the back.
Yeah,
is a
everything.
Personal foul.
Yep.
Okay.
When all he
right,
does
okay.
the whole hit the arm, personal foul, right. rough in the okay. pass, or yada, yada. It
okay.
all counts.
Two and a half.
Number seven. How many interceptions will Seattle have against, I assume, Aaron Rodgers, unless he gets taken out?
Yeah. Okay. So we are going to confine this to Aaron Rodgers.
No,
so in other words, if he goes down in the first quarter, we're still counting.
Yes.
If he hurts that hamstring, has got to come on.
Correct.
Okay. I will put the number of interceptions. I think Aaron's going to be a little overeager. He's going to want to make things happen. He knows how big this game is. I'm going to put it at 1.5.
All right, I'm taking the over. I think there's going to be desperation in the air.
Yep.
No. 8 tiebreaker is total passing attempts for Green Bay. So that's your – you want to take a stab at what you think attempts will be?
So we're talking attempts that would also include sacks?
I think it has to show up in the box score. So, like this week, Rodgers was 20 for 30.
All right.
So whatever that number is.
All right.
What's
so,
in the
so
denominator?
So not dropbacks. We're talking the ones he actually throws.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, I think the attempts were down this week because of the weather conditions. I don't know what we'll have next week, but I will set that at 35.5.
All right. Well, this is a tiebreaker, so it's not a over-under.
Oh, all right.
That's a tiebreaker. I'm going to say 35. I'm going to say less than that. And then my last one, my 8.5, is do you think at any point – this doesn't count. I'm just curious if people want to chime in. Do you think they'll be booing at Lambeau Field at any time that you can easily discern from the TV?
I'm going to say no.
I'm going to say yes.
The reason I'm saying no is because they've won a couple of games, and I think they're going to get beat cleanly, but I don't think it's going to be embarrassing. I think people generally boo when there's an embarrassing sort of performance, like a 45-7 kind of thing. Yep. I don't think it's going to be that bad.
Okay. Yeah, I think there'll be booing against Seattle, against Sherman, against, you know, all the other guys. But I think you're talking about
derisive booing on, yes, like Packer fan on Packer crime.
Yes, that's Packer on Packer crime. McCarthy, Rodgers, defense. I'm predicting boo birds this game. I hope I'm wrong. I'll be the first one to cheer their success if they can pull this out. I think it's a long shot.
All right.
I'm tainted by 2014. Maybe just like the Packers, I can't shake 2014 out of me.
Somebody had a terrific point when they were, you know, lining up for the onside kick, and you know the question was, you know, can you watch an onside kick
ever the same
against
way
the Packers and not think about, you know, the Brandon Bostic, and that I know I will not ever be able to not think about that when someone's trying to do an onside kick against the Packers. I mean, it just, that was such a horrible moment. And you know, I mean, all you got to do is control that thing. And by the way, I thought that was one heck of a great onside kick. The way that guy for Houston got to, you know, have the ball spin the way it did. Yeah. I hadn't seen an onside kick quite like that one in the past.
Yeah, and I guess I don't like the way they do it. I mean, that ball went right by the blockers. I know they're taught probably to ignore it and let Davante Adams or Jordy Nelson or whoever catch it. And had they done that in Seattle, they would have maybe won that game. But, I mean, the ball went right between two blockers, and they just let it go. And, I just feel like if it's close to you, you should grab it. But that's what Bostic did, and he wasn't the hands guy. So I onside kicks just seem a lot more likely to happen for the kicking side than it should. It should be a lot more difficult. But
well, I really do think that that Houston gave themselves the best chance of making that work by, you know, not kicking it end over end, but kind of the spinning on the side. I think it's harder to pick up, and I think that gives them the better chance. Didn't work out, fortunately, but I was having visions of, you know, January 2015 dancing in my head.
It was awful. Let's not talk about that anymore. Bad karma.
So if I want to play these betting lines, Dave, what do I do?
You send an email. First, you write down your answers.
Good idea.
Type them in an email.
Okay.
And send it to Mike Miller, and his email address is mitnomiller, mitnomiller@gmail.com. mitnomiller@gmail.com.
And there you have it. If you want to play the betting lines, have a chance to be in the luxury of the presidential suite of the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino. That is how you do it, and we do it every week when we have fun with it. A couple people corresponded with us this week, and I want to acknowledge the people that were kind enough on Twitter. In fact, during the time in which we've been chatting here, I noticed that Patrick Keogh, our man in Ireland, sent a very lovely picture of his Packer ornament hanging on his Christmas tree in Ireland. So that's a very nice thing. Thank you for posting that, Patrick. You mentioned Richard Durain before, and he also was with us on Twitter this week. Rob Gardner had also been in touch with us. Custin, perhaps? I don't really know exactly if that's right or not. But anyway, hey, thanks for being in touch with us. One of our female listeners, her name is Colleen, but she goes by I Hate 2016 on Twitter. Also in touch, Sam, C. Day Rindell, checking in with us, as well as Jameis. So thanks to everyone who was in touch with us on Twitter. If you want to correspond with me and Dave, you can get us at Packers Therapy on Twitter, at Packers Therapy on Twitter. Some email this week, of course, Chuck, checking in with us. But our guy, Richard Durain, did send a really nice email, in fact, that you forwarded to me earlier today. There's one bit of it, Dave, I wanted to kind of read because I thought it was pretty cool. And maybe this is something that people would like to write to us, PackersTherapy@yahoo.com. And this is what Richard Durain wrote to us. How do people watch the game? He says, I used to enjoy pausing the DVR for an hour or so I can skip through the commercials, but recently changed my approach. I now love to immerse myself in social media during the game. I'm texting my brother, who's in Milwaukee. I'm following Tom Silverstein's live blog on the Journal Sentinel and reading, sending tweets to other Packer fans. That has really added an element I've been missing from being in Wisconsin. He currently lives in Michigan. That is being surrounded by like-minded crazies who love the Packers as much as I do. I thought that was really interesting, and thank you, Richard, for being in touch about that, because I like it both ways. This past week, I was able to follow along on Twitter. I was actually in the air flying from Austin, Texas, back to Plover, and I was following the game via Twitter and commenting with people, kind of chatting along, and that was a lot of fun. During the Badger game on Saturday, I watched it in real time, something I usually don't do, and it was a lot of fun being able to commiserate with people in real time on Twitter. That's really is the best way to use Twitter, and it was a lot of fun. But normally, because there's things going on in my life, I typically record the game and watch it with my son, and we can, you know, watch an entire game in, you know, two hours, maybe a little bit less. You zap out those commercials, get rid of the halftime, and then it's just, you know, wall-to-wall football. But you do miss out on the social media aspects of it. Do you have a preference, Dave, in the way you watch the game? I mean, are you a guy who likes to watch it in real time and use Twitter to, you know, like Richard does, or would you much rather record the thing and just, you know, kind of immerse yourself in a darkened room, just you and football, for two straight hours?
Yeah, I'm kind of the lock myself down when it's live, and then Twitter, you know, that's basically how any kind of chatting or just there's enough of people I follow on Twitter that the stream is constant. And I feel like there are people at the game, writers who can say who is injured, who's getting worked on the sidelines, you know. Some people put video highlights on there. I mean, there's so much that Twitter can offer the game experience that I find the watch it live commercial, I get to see commentary kind of as I go, is a lot more satisfying than just fast-forwarding the commercials. The other thing, too, is when I feel like I watch a game fast-forwarding through the commercials, the lure.
Spit it out, Dave.
Yeah, I was going to say the lure of. Sorry, I'll edit that out. The lure of seeing who won at the end of the game is really, really high. And if I know who won or lost, then the emotional impact of the game is lost on me completely. Either it's a win or a loss. You think back over time, I can remember gut punching losses like it was yesterday, except if it was when I watched, you know, a tape delay. If I had missed it and I had to watch it. Those games I just don't remember. I feel like live is something very impactful for me, and there are times when I don't want it to be that impactful because I feel like the Packers are going to lose. But most of the time, I'm willing to take the risk, and I want to watch it live. And Twitter is a great way, is a great complement for the game.
So what you're saying is you lack the discipline to stay off social media and then watch the game when it's, you know, at your leisure and convenience.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I have a hard time staying off Twitter between plays. I mean, I'm just constantly updating my Twitter. And, you know, people who I agree with, disagree with, I mean, they're always commenting. So it's a running commentary during the game. It's a lot of fun.
You know, I love using Twitter for live events. It doesn't have to be just football or, you know, or during the baseball season. It's a lot of fun. It could be during the Oscars or any kind of major event where you can be, you know, kind of talking to people. The election, you know, when that was going on, you know.
That wasn't fun for me, though.
Well, but it's just the kind of thing, though, where you are sharing it with people, some people that you've never met before, but you've been following them and corresponding with them perhaps for years via social media, and that does make it a lot of fun. And I did enjoy watching the Badger game. It was a horrible outcome, sadly.
Yeah,
but still, it kind of made it fun to be with other people who are fellow travelers and who care about it as much as you do. And you don't necessarily agree with all their takes, but you know, everyone's kind of coming from the same side of the ball. You know, you want the Packers or the Badgers or the Brewers or whoever it is to win, but you have different viewpoints, and it's like you're in a, you know, it's like you're in a big party and you're all watching the game together, and that's a good time. On the other hand, you know, life is, you know, complicated and busy enough, and there's enough things that I want to do that it's sometimes nice to be able to, you know, record a noon game, and I don't get around to watching it until 4 o'clock, but I can watch the whole thing, have it all done in the bag by 6 o'clock, and I can, you know, be watching the latest Westworld that evening. In, you know, so it kind of makes it possible at this time of the year, Christmas shopping, whatever, you want to get out and do it, and so you don't have to carve out, you know, between 12 and noon to watch, or between 3:25, you know, you don't have to be in front of your TV. That's why DVR is such a fantastic invention, you know, because you can time shift those things so well. However, this is where I draw the line. When it's a big game, you know, where it's a you know, it's a playoff game or NFC championship, that's got to be watched live. I mean, that has to be in real time. You can't be time shifting that. I mean, you've got to be there because that's, and it's not just for social media. You have to be there because that is the event. You know, that's why I watch the Big Ten championship game live. Well, partially because I was alone in a hotel room. You know, I wanted something to do. But, you know, big things, I think, in order to participate, you have to do it when it's actually happening. You can't save it up and watch it later.
Yeah, I agree.
I do have a complaint I want to lodge, because I know we have so many important people listening to Packers Therapy. I'm at the Hyatt Place in Austin, the one that's by the Arboretum in Austin, Texas. And I'm watching the Badger game, and eight times during the Badger game, the TV in my hotel room clicked off just on its own.
It was trying to help you. It was ghost of a friend or something trying to tell you, don't watch this game.
Well, the problem was that for, you know, the first half of it, it was really well worth watching. It was the second half that was terrible, but it's like, really? You know, and so it clicks off, and I have to wait for it to reset itself before I can pop it back on. Now, during that interminable halftime, what was that, a half hour? It was on forever, the halftime. That didn't bother me when it popped off then. But it's just kind of irritating. You know, you're kind of into the game, you're watching it, and all of a sudden the thing just goes off. And it's like, come on, Hyatt, get some decent TVs. I mean, it's not the fanciest hotel in the world, but come on, at least you can get a working TV.
Yeah.
So
going down to the bar or something.
Well, you know, it's these Hyatt places are, you know, they're kind of like a, well, yeah, it's sort of like a Hilton Garden Inn. It's a nicer version of that kind of place where, you know, you don't really have the swanky lounge. You know, you just sort of have some, I don't know, like a card table set up with a folding chair. It's kind of their version of a lobby, you know.
Okay, yeah. So that was your shot. Well, it was, let's not get into Badgers therapy because I don't have the ability to take care of that game. That was just an awful, awful game.
That was terrible. Well, hey, do you have any pop culture this week before we wrap this thing up?
I really don't. I've finished Westworld season one.
Don't. Okay, I've not.
What an amazing ending.
Everybody. I have not. But you're telling me it is worth. I mean, because I will get to. I've been gone for 4 days, so I haven't had a chance to catch up on stuff.
I think someone said it well. They said it's infuriating but fascinating. It's infuriating because I mean they just introduced so many complications and puzzles, and no one talks clearly. You know, just once I'd like someone to say, "What are you talking about? Can you just explain in plain English?" You know, rather they talk in code and. But it's a fascinating, beautiful show to watch. And I'm sort of repeating myself. I saw Arrival again. I took a friend to go see it, and I can't tell you how much I enjoyed that movie. So whether you see it in the theater or wait until it comes out, it's one of those rare movies I've saw twice in the theater. It's great.
Well, now Fred White did correspond with us, and he mentioned I guess you might say dittoed you and saying what a fantastic movie that is. But he was also mentioning a podcast on Radiolab in which they kind of gave some information that put context around the movie. If you want to look it up, it's and I haven't listened to it yet. Fred sent the link to it, but he recommended listening to it and would give background and context that would make, you know, the movie – you know, a better watch. He said it's a great movie without it, but if you listen to this podcast on Radiolab, it would also help to understand the movie better. So,
okay, good.
Yeah. So anyway, that's one that he strongly recommends. And with the holidays upon us, I'll be getting some time off, and I think that's one I'm going to try to seek out and watch it if I can, because it's getting some good reviews. And if it gets thumbs up from both you and Fred White, it's got to be good.
Yep, I agree.
Well,
you won't be disappointed.
Okay, well, I will be disappointed. I'm constantly disappointed, so that's just kind of how it goes for me.
Okay.
All right, well, I wasn't disappointed with the Packer game. Packers did win. Go to 6-6. Nice to be 500 again. You know, it's better than being underwater. You can make what you want to the last two games. They were both wins. And to me, season really, in lots of ways, is going to hang in the balance this week when the Packers will host the Seattle Seahawks. A loss doesn't really end it, but it gets really, really tough if the Packers don't find a way to claw out a victory against Seattle. So they will play on Sunday afternoon. It will be, 3:25 start, if I'm not mistaken, 3:25 Lambeau Field time start. I think I'm going to watch it. I'm pretty sure Dave is going to watch it, too. And afterwards, we will have a podcast, and we will tell you what we think about it. But until that time, I'm Chris.
I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.